Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jeff Deeney, who's a social worker and writer based in Philadelphia. His work has appeared in The Atlantic and Newsweek, and he's a columnist at The Fix, a website dedicated to addiction and recovery. He has an article at The Atlantic, Hoffman and the Terrible Heroin Deaths in the Shadows. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeff Deeney.
Thank you for inviting me, Ian.
And you yourself are a recovering addict. You've been clean now for how long, 10 years?
It was 10 years, yeah, absolutely, on January 20th, just passed.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman was apparently clean for 23 years. Is that that's the report that I've read.
That is what I understand, yeah, that he had more than two decades clean and sober before relapsing.
And he was a family man with young kids. Do you have any idea of what happened there? Or is it just is it one of those?
Well, I think that it's not terribly common, but it's also not unheard of for people with very long periods of sobriety to relapse. I mean, I don't think that any recovering addict is immune to the potential for relapse. That's part of the reason why recovering addicts stay plugged into communities of other recovering addicts where they can get ongoing support for their drug-related issues. Particularly as you get older, there's questions of, you know, will I need to have pain medication for a surgical procedure, for instance? You know, what if I need to have a massive dental operation, something like that, where you're going to have to take narcotic medication of some kind. Those are the sort of things that if you're plugged into, you know, recovery communities, you can get direction in terms of how to navigate something like that, which is very tricky without it potentially triggering a relapse. And so that's what I've seen in the time that I've been in recovery, people that have had long-term sobriety that have relapsed and started using again. A lot of times it's hooked to a medical procedure or something like that.
Well, in this case, apparently, as much as we know, that Philip Seymour Hoffman died from an overdose of heroin laced with fentanyl. Is that your understanding?
I think right now the fentanyl angle is still unresolved. I don't know if the toxicology has come back yet. The fentanyl-tainted heroin thing is a major problem. I mean, I'll say that as somebody who works still in North Philadelphia communities where heroin trades and is used, the fentanyl thing is a bigger problem now than it's ever been in the past. It's popped up a couple times previously, but right now it's popping up more frequently and across more broader areas of geography where, you know, for instance, over the past, you know, 8 months or so, you know, first there was a batch in Camden, New Jersey, and then it jumped across the river to Philly, and then it went further west to central Pennsylvania, you know, Lebanon, PA, and now, you know, out to Pittsburgh, they're finding it down in Baltimore. So these bags that are fentanyl, which is a very, very potent narcotic painkiller mixed with heroin, are popping up more frequently, and they are very dangerous because it's very easy to overdose if you're injecting them.
And my understanding is that fentanyl is very powerful and somewhat unpredictable, and and it's also can be manufactured in locally in illicit pharmacies.
Yeah, I actually, you know, I've been watching this for a long time, and the thing that struck me this last bout of overdoses that came out of Pittsburgh, where, I mean, you can see how in about an eight-month period, it just walked across the state of Pennsylvania in a straight line. It was like people dying in Camden, people dying in Philadelphia, all the way up to western Pennsylvania. So I don't know. I mean, I can only speculate about what that might be, but I don't know. I had thought that it's possible that maybe there's one person who manufactures this fentanyl who, you know, puts it out on the streets, and when things start to get hot and there's attention from law enforcement, maybe is able to just pick up shop and move on to the next town. I don't know. I mean, I think that law enforcement, I think, is pretty uncertain at this point exactly how this stuff keeps getting into the stream of black market narcotics.
Well, of course, the tragedy, as you point out in your article at The Atlantic, Jeff Deeney, Hoffman and the Terrible Heroin Deaths in the Shadows, is that there is a product, a very easily accessible. It's often called Narcan. Name is Naxalone.
Naltrexone. It's an overdose reversing medication. It sort of like strips the opiate from the receptor in the brain, so that somebody who is even very close to the verge of death, if you give them it's coming in a nasal spray now, where you can just spray it in somebody's nostril, and they're revived immediately. Like they spring back from that, and it's a really amazing medication. And there is a push amongst advocates for that to be available over the counter. I mean, it has no abuse potential. It's really non-toxic. I mean, there's really no reason it shouldn't be more widely available, not just to addicts on the street who might be injecting heroin, but people who have pain medication in their house. If you have small children, or if you have elderly people in the home who might be able to access that, it seems to me from a poison control perspective, it would be smart to have the antidote around to a toxic dose of that medication.
So, Jeff Deeney, again, Jeff Deeney's a social worker and writer based in Philadelphia. His work has appeared in The Atlantic and Newsweek, and he's a columnist at The Fix, a website dedicated to addiction and recovery. And he has an article at The Atlantic, Hoffman and the Terrible Heroin Deaths in the Shadows. Now, in terms of naloxone, or Narcan, as it's also called, if it were readily available, in Philip Seymour Hoffman's case, he was injecting alone. So obviously, if you overdose on a powerful dose that's perhaps laced with fentanyl, then you're not the person to recover it, because your lights go out pretty quickly, right? You need a partner, don't you?
That is what I do understand in terms of the fentanyl bags. Yeah, that it hits you pretty quick and pretty hard. And what I think you might even start to see is that the thing with the fentanyl bags is that they go really fast. Once they hit the market, they disappear really quickly, because users seek them out when they hear that people are dying because they bought, the Ace of Spades bag or whatever it is branded as. That, addicts with substantial habits are going to think that this is something that, if it's strong enough to kill new users, that this is definitely going to be something I want to get my hands on, because it'll be able to hold me in my addiction. And I think that maybe that might start to pass, because I've talked to users who say they don't really like the fentanyl bags too much. Like, it's a different feeling. It's more of a very heavy, physical kind of experience, as opposed to the sort of lightheaded euphoria that comes along with heroin, that like it hits you fast and it just nails you to the couch kind of thing. And a lot of users don't like it. I mean, that is what I've heard, yeah.
But you also said that a lot of heavy users like it strong. So when the reputation comes out that you've got some really heavy stuff on the street, rather than run away from it, people are attracted to it. Is that what you told
right.
us?
Yeah, I mean, if you know there's a – basically, yeah, I mean, a bag is strong. If a bunch of – if 14 people died off of the same bag the day before, I mean, you know that it's definitely potent. And yeah, absolutely. Users are attracted to that. And, risk of overdose is part of being an injecting drug user. I think that's part of the deal. If you're an addict, that comes along with the territory. And, people who have substantial habits really feel like, they can handle it, because they're experienced users. They know what kind of dosage they need. And I think what you see with Philip Seymour Hoffman is also the fact that he was going in and out of rehab towards the end of his life. And that is the time when you are more likely as a user to overdose. Like if you were recently detoxed off of the drug and your tolerance for the drug resets, and you were not taking that into account and you just go back out on the street and buy the same amount of drugs that you're used to doing before you got detoxed, that's a way that you can very easily overdose. And we see that here in Philadelphia a lot with people getting out of jail and going right back to the corners where they used to buy at and doing the amount they used to do and overdosing and dying not far from the corner where they bought.
So in terms of the work that you do, Jeff Deeney, as a columnist for The Fix, which is a website dedicated to addiction and recovery, I'm sure a lot of people listening to our interview will basically say, well, you know, if people want to do that to themselves, you know, they're welcome to, but why should we care?
Sure. And I would, you know, I would argue that, you know, you should care, first of all, because the cost is really, really expensive in terms of dollars. If you want to look at it from that perspective, you know, when drug users wind up in prison, you know, it costs the state a tremendous amount of money. When drug users contract chronic diseases like hepatitis C or HIV, those things cost tremendous amounts of money. If somebody is getting drug treatment who is poor and doesn't have private health coverage, those kinds of things cost a lot of money. So, in terms of having smart approaches to our drug policies, there's definitely a cost perspective as well in terms of, you know, look, if you can give people clean syringes are very cheap. And if you don't get hung up on, you know, a moral question about whether, are you facilitating somebody's use or enabling them to use if you're giving them clean syringes, but prevent most of those people from contracting HIV or hepatitis C, a drug or a disease that will cost society tremendous amounts of money to treat, you know, there's a financial incentive on top of just sort of like the basic humanity of wanting to make sure that everybody has access to quality care for whatever disorder that they have. And, you know, we are trying more and more to see addiction as a health issue as opposed to a criminal justice issue.
But you have to add to that, surely, Jeff Deeney, that there are drug-resistant bacteria that are also being infection rates are going up amongst injecting drug users.
Right. And, you know, this is something that I did write about this for The Fix last year. And this is something I think that is not reported on enough. I think that this is going to be a very, very big deal in the next 10 to 20 years of drug addiction. You know, what you see right now is an uptick. It's not an epidemic per se yet, but you definitely see a higher frequency of needle using drug users in the community who are contracting MRSA and other kinds of antibiotic resistant infections. So, and the consequences of those are really, really horrifying. I mean, I have spoken to families of drug addicts who have contracted MRSA and other kinds of resistant bacterial infections on the street, and it's really horrifying in terms of both the medical care that's required is incredibly invasive, multiple surgeries, talking about people having large parts of their body removed in order to trap the infection and get rid of it. So you're talking about people that are winding up profoundly disabled, you know, permanent disability, and the impact that has, again, in terms of the costs from, you know, a health care system perspective, and then also just in terms of the humanity of somebody having to experience that when it might not be necessary. I think that is going to be a really, really big issue in years to come as resistant bacteria become more common.
Again, I've been speaking with Jeff Deeney, who's a social worker and writer based in Philadelphia. His work has appeared in The Atlantic and Newsweek, and he's a columnist at The Fix, a website dedicated to addiction and recovery. He has an article at The Atlantic, Hoffman and the Terrible Heroin Deaths in the Shadows. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back examining the drug overdose death of actor Philip Seymour Hoffman.